Department of Defense wants to change some of its personnel policies for the first time in decades. Acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness Brad Carson's working on a series of recommendations as part of the Force of the Future initiative at DOD. Those recommendations are due on Secretary Ashton Carter's desk by August 19th. Ron Sanders is Vice President of Booz Allen Hamilton, former Chief Human Capital Officer, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and writing about a wargaming exercise he participated in, what the future of the defense workforce might look like. We're focused very heavily, Ron, on what the military numbers will be, and people are paying very close attention. For example, will there be 450,000 soldiers? Will there be 420,000 soldiers? We don't see the same emphasis on the numbers and the makeup of the civilian workforce at DOD, do we, Ron? Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Francis. And no, we don't. Typically, the civilian workforce is viewed as sort of an independent variable. I mean, a dependent variable in the Defense Department. Of course, the military force is dependent on national security strategy and things like that. Consider that sort of the given, and then the civilian support structure follows. But I will tell you that in the war game we did for Secretary Carson, we really tried to stay away from the numbers. Because the numbers are so hard to predict. We can't even predict what the numbers are going to be next year, much less 10 years from now, given the volatile nature of the world. I think the key here and the advantage of using something like a war game to do this is that you need a set of personnel policies, practices, technologies that are resilient enough to handle just about any alternative future. And the idea is to test them against those alternative futures. Will it work in a great economy or a lousy one? And as you know, DOD is sort of countercyclical in that regard. When the economy is not so good, DOD can meet its recruiting goals, both military and civilian. When the economy is booming, that becomes harder. So, again, you can't predict that 1 or 2 years out, much less 10. But if you can say, let's test this particular set of military personnel policies and technologies, civilian personnel policies and technologies against different scenarios, and if they pass muster against those different scenarios, then you got a winning strategy.
You write in this piece in the Federal Times that you and your colleagues at Booz Allen have been doing war games for a long time. You write, they typically focus on a military O plan or a national security strategy or some emergency or crisis like a cyber attack. And that's why you propose in this piece, it appears, that this particular exercise was different because it wasn't preparing for a big bang. It was preparing for whatever operational challenge may be presented, or no operational challenge that's presented, just normal operations presented to the Defense Department in 2025.
Yes, particularly from a policy and program standpoint, as well as the enabling technologies. And again, these are personnel policies, programs, and technologies. And as far as we were able to tell, and the we here includes our colleagues in defense, no one's ever done a war game, quote unquote, to test policies and programs and technologies like that. So it was very, very innovative on Secretary Carson's part. And I think the people that participated in it got a real kick out of it because, again, we did sort of paint a picture of a future, in a couple of cases, a fairly bleak future in terms of recruiting and retaining talent, both uniformed and otherwise. And we also took some license with the world situation and tested the participants against the challenge of, for example, a sudden surge in military requirements or a change, a breakthrough technology. All of those things test an organization's ability to sort of re-vector its human capital policies and strategies, in some cases to turn it on a dime in relative terms. And in DOD's case, nothing is more important than the department's ability to do that in the face of all sorts of exigencies.
I know you have to be careful about how much you talk about something like this because it's very sensitive within the Defense Department, and I know you have to be careful about how deeply you go into the conversation, but can you talk at all about the kinds of questions that were asked or surprising pieces of information that came out of it, either for your side or for the Pentagon side or any of those kinds of things, maybe things that somebody wasn't expecting to happen going into the exercise, but that happened as you came out of the exercise?
Francis, what I think I can do is talk a little bit about some of the things that Secretary Carson has identified that that we looked at in the war game. I'm not comfortable sharing how the war, how the participants came out on some of these issues.
But sure.
For example, you know, the military has an up or out policy. So Secretary Carson has said, look, does it make sense to invest in a military cyber ninja and give that military cyber ninja all kinds of experience, you know, in cyber command, cyber mission teams, and then when he or she reaches a certain rank, to say, you got to stop doing that, you got to go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like it, you can leave the military. Now, what happens if we made the boundaries between military service and civilian service, civil service, more permeable? So, you know, revisiting such sacred cows as up or out, looking at the boundary layers between military and civil service, and even serving in private industry, those are some of the things that the war game addressed. And frankly, Francis, you know this, every federal agency is going to face their own version of those questions. With millennials and post-millennials in the workforce, they're going to want to move around. They're not going to want to stay in one place. Yet we're still going to want to invest in them. So how do we get some return on that investment?
Well, what I hear and from you and what I've heard from other people who have looked at what Secretary Carson's talked about Force of the Future, is a willingness and an understanding of the necessity of confronting the reality of what the workforce will look like, rather than where I think a lot of folks have been in the last 5 years in the federal workforce, not just in DOD, but all across the agencies, which is to think about it about how we'd like it to be. And we don't get to live in how we'd like it to be, as you very well know, Ron.
No, a lot of this stuff, particularly the demographics, are inexorable. So, you know, think about this. The generals and SES members of 2025 are in high school today, and they're trying to figure out whether they're going to join the military or partake in public service or go work in private industry, and they're thinking about, you know, is it engineering, is it business, is it something else? And I think one of the things that that agencies are going to have to do, and I think DOD is a good example, is to begin shaping that candidate pool way, way upstream. It may be just encouraging kids to stick with STEM, scientific, technical, engineering, and math coursework, only because we know we're going to need STEM talent in the future. And at some point, though, as they progress and hopefully stick with STEM coursework, we can begin shaping their interest in wearing the uniform or joining the civil service. But this is a long battle. It's a long campaign. And you're right. You're kind of stuck with the labor force that you're given. But I think using something like this Force of the Future war game, you can get out ahead of it. You can think about the kinds of policies that you're going to need, maybe not today, maybe not 2 years from now, but 5 and 10 years from now, when the workforce looks like X, when the world looks like Y, how are we going to compete for talent? And look, as Yogi Berra said, the future ain't what it used to be. You're not going to predict precisely, but at least you're thinking about it, and you're beginning to develop a set of agile, resilient human capital policies that are going to be ready for the future, rather than just sort of wake up one morning and say, uh-oh, look what we've got.
The reality at the core of all of this and of all of the topics in this same area that you and I have discussed many times in this program, Ron, is you can only hire people that apply. So you got to figure out how to get those people that you want aware of the fact that there is a possibility for them to have a job or a career that's attractive. And that's what's at the core of what it sounds like this is about. This war game, and therefore, it strikes me as the kind of thing that every agency should be thinking about doing.
Well, and here's a DOD example, but again, I think it's applicable to almost any agency. Our military worries a lot about something called propensity to serve. That is the willingness of a recruit age young person to undertake the rigors of military service, to wear the uniform. And that propensity is influenced by parents and teachers and coaches who have had a military experience. And the number of parents and teachers and coaches who have had a positive military experience, just by the nature of our population, our culture, our society, et cetera, is shrinking. So where are kids going to learn about the military if they don't learn it from their parents or their teachers or their coaches? And if they don't learn about it, will they have a propensity to serve?
Mm-hmm.
And, take propensity to serve in the military and substitute propensity to serve as a Customs and Border Protection agent or an FBI agent or a grants administrator in a domestic agency, some of the more common public service occupations. Again, that's the long game here, and the psychologists and sociologists tell us that kids are making career decisions, at least in a general sense, when they're in their mid-teens. And so if we're waiting until they graduate from college to go after the talent, especially scarce talent, scarce skills, we're already at a competitive disadvantage. I think if there's a lesson to be learned in all of this, when it comes to that sort of long game, the influence, you can just sort of let it happen and depend on whatever your public image is at the time that a young person is making a career decision, and you're sort of then left 5 and 10 years later with whatever that was, or you can try to affirmatively shape it. And I think that's frankly a lesson I think the military can teach all of us, because they're thinking about actually shaping it.